Welcome back, everyone. The seminar speaker today is Jin Zhang. So Jin was our old friend. He was a postdoc with Matt, and then he moved to Imperial College London for approximately 3 years. And last year, he joined the faculty of ICTP in Beijing. And today, he's gonna talk about causality constraints on gravitational effective field series. Dream, please.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for the invitation. And it's really a pleasure to be back to Parameter also virtually. So today I'm going to talk about some work that I did with Claudia and Jeremy and also Andrew. So I think probably most of you already know Claudia and Andrew. So they are professors at Imperial College. And Jeremy, he is a PhD student at University of Geneva. Okay, so maybe I can start by giving you a brief introduction about the gravitational EFT that we are going to consider today. So from the theoretical point of view, we know that general relativity should be considered as an effective field theory. That is to say, so if we are only interested in gravity at low energy, and by low energy, I mean energy is lower than some cutoff scale, this capital lambda, then we can basically integrate out all the heavy fields, that is the field with mass heavier than this cutoff scale. And by doing that, we can obtain a EFT of this form. So basically in this EFT, you would find the Einstein-Hilbert action would be just the leading term in the EFT expansion. And besides that, you also have a kind of an infinite number of higher dimension operators. So these higher dimension operators are constructed with Riemann tensors or Weyl tensors, and also their covariant derivatives. And these higher dimension operators precisely capture the effects of the heavy field that you integrate out on the low energy gravity. And of course, all these high dimension operators should be suppressed by this cutoff scale. And that's why, for example, in our solar system, the gravity can be well described just by the leading term, which is the Einstein-Hilbert action. And all the high dimensional operators only contribute in a perturbative way. But still, we want to make some detection, or we want to prove the effects of these high dimensional operators, because the cutoff scale itself could signal the scale of the new physics. And also, if we can really make detection on these operators, then it can also connect us with the dark sector in our universe. And fortunately, now we have gravitational wave observation. So this this technique allows us to observe gravity in strong gravity regime. So in this case, we may expect for example, the Riemann or the curvature is still less than the cutoff scale, but the suppression is not that's strong comparing the situation in the solar system. And indeed, along this topic, people have already made some efforts. For example, in this paper, people consider some particular EFT model, for example, the EFT with the dimension 8 operators, and they calculate the corrections from this dimension 8 operators on the inspiring waveform. And people also calculate the corrections from high dimensional operators on the quasi-normal mode, and also on probably on the tidal deformability of the black hole. And and interestingly, so in this work, these authors use they consider a particular EFT model, which is the one with the dimension 8 operators, and they using the spiral waveform construct in this paper to analyze the gravitational events that are observed by LIGO and Virgo. And by doing that, they can impose some constraints on the cutoff scale of this EFT. So it's very nice. So basically, this is what people did kind of from the observational consideration. And on the other hand, so people also trying to impose constraints on this EFT model from just a theoretical consideration. Because so when we write down an EFT, we just write down all the possible operators that respect the underlying symmetry. But this doesn't mean this EFT that we write down always have UV correspondence. That is to say, so for example, if you write down EFT, it doesn't always have a, or it does not can be always embedded in a causal and maybe Lorentz invariant UV complex theory. Therefore, by requiring so this EFT can be embeddable in a UV complex theory, people can also impose some constraints on the Lorentz EFT, and in particular, they can impose constraints on the coefficients of these higher dimensional operators. There are also a lot of work, for example, by considering positivity bound or considering the group velocity of gravitational waves propagating in this EFT model. So in this talk, we will also, I mean, in most of this talk, we will also trying to constrain the EFT model also from the theoretical consideration that is from causality. So basically, we are going to scattering some gravitational waves on black holes, and by requiring the time delay or the phase caused by the phase shift caused by the scattering is respect causality, then we can also impose some constraints on this EFT model. Okay, so here is the outline of this talk. So in the following, I will first start with a particular EFT. So in this EFT, it only has one dimension 8 operator, and then we will discuss like the black hole perturbations and also how gravitational waves scattering on a black hole in this EFT model. Specifically, we will calculate like the phase shift and also the time delay. And then I will show you that, so in this case, we will have a time advance. We will discuss like how, what does this time advance mean, especially whether this time advance would signal a violation of causality. Or what do we mean by causality in curved space-time? And the reason we start with this particular dimension 8 EFT is, so first, it's a kind of a very simple model, and also it demonstrates all the points we want to, our arguments. And another reason is, so we want to make a connection with the observation, because in the previous study, they also consider this EFT this dimension 8 EFT. So we can compare.
Sorry, can I interrupt and ask a question?
Sure.
So I'm wondering, maybe you said something, but I missed it. So why do you jump to dimension 8 operators when the EFT really, starts at 4 and then 6 and then 8?
As I said, so first, this is a kind of a naive model to demonstrate our point, and also in the study with this observational constraints, they also consider this EFT, and we we want to make a connection with their study. And another reason is there are some realizations, for example, from the string theory, if there are some underlying symmetry, you can construct EFT with just a dimension 8 operator. So the dimension 4 and dimension 6 just vanish. So there are some realizations. But I agree that...
But generically speaking, then I would still expect that dimensional 4 operators would dominate the EFT.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So in the kind of the second part, I will try to kind of extend the discussion on the generic EFT, which is the one you mentioned with all the dimension 4 and dimension 6 operators. So this is just, you can think of it as a toy model to just demonstrate how we use this, how we impose these causality constraints. And I will extend the discussion to the generic one.
Okay, so thank you.
Can I piggyback on Eric's question for a second? Because the dimension 4 operators vanishing makes sense in 4 dimensions just because of field redefinitions, but I don't really understand the argument. I know there is one for why you don't have these dimension 6 guys. And I'm wondering if I should see that as a naturalness issue to not have these dimension 6 operators.
Sorry, your question was why there should be no dimension 6?
Yeah. The lack of dimension 6 operators, is that like a fine-tuning issue?
Yeah, I mean, in some fine-tuned model, you could have the vanishing with dimension 6, but in general, you should have dimension 6 appeared. So we will talk about dimension 6 operators.
All right.
Yeah. In general, you could have dimension 4 and dimension 6, and I think you already know, so the dimension 4 does not contribute. So the leading correction comes from the dimension 6 operator. We will talk about that. But as a start, we can just focus on this. You can think of it as a toy model, just to illustrate how we impose constraints.
That's great. Thank you.
Period of piggybacking. you can, by field redefinitions, remove the dimension 4. And is it understood why you couldn't do it in general in dimension 6? I mean, that 4 is the last respite where you can do something with field redefinitions?
No, you cannot remove the dimension 6 completely. So you will see it later. So when you do this field redefinition, you can only remove terms that are proportional to like the Ricci tensor in a Lagrange. But for dimension... Sorry?
Thank you.
Okay. You will say it later. Right. So after we extend the discussion to this generic gravitational EFT, I will briefly comment on the detectability of the high dimension operators with future gravitational wave detectors. Okay, so now let's start with this dimension 8 operators, which I think most of you think it is unnatural, but anyway. So this is the Lagrangian of the dimension 8 EFT that we're going to consider. So here is the operator, and it is suppressed by this cutoff scale. And also here we introduce a parameter C1 just to carry the sign of this. Just to carry the sign of these operators, so C1 can be either plus 1 or minus 1. And then you can just write down all the field equations, so it's kind of a standard. So as you may expect, besides the Euler-Einstein equations, you also have some corrections from the dimension 8 operators. And these corrections should be accompanied by some dimensionless parameters, because now we are considering black holes. So you may expect these parameters, it's a combination of the size of the black hole and also the cutoff scale of your theory. Then you can look at the background solution. So you can calculate the corrections from the dimension 8 operators. And here are the corrections on the metric components of the Schwarzschild solution. And you can also study the metric perturbations above this background. So I think most of you are familiar with this. So in GR, we have the perturbation described by the ridge with the Rayleigh equations. And now because we have these dimension 8 operators, then you may expect there will be some corrections on the ridge Wheeler Rayleigh equations. So since here we only focus on the leading corrections from these operators, so you may expect the correction would be proportional to this C1 and also this parameter epsilon. So let me just be more specific about how we derive this correction. So basically, if you have some high dimension operators, you may expect there would be some higher derivative terms. But since we want to, we only focus on the leading corrections, and in this sense, you can use the Diels order equations and substitute these equations into your original equation. And by doing that, again, you can remove all the higher derivative terms. And in the end, you only end up with something like this.
Sorry, can I ask you a question about that form? So how is the inverse square law for gravity modified in this for this action?
You mean for the background?
No, if I want to see like the inverse square law for Newtonian gravity. So this you're solving for Schwarzschild now.
Yeah, but so probably you can say from this, if you think this as the kind of the Newtonian potential, then you would have, besides the Euler Schwarzschild metric, you would have something like this. Is that to answer your question?
Yeah, it's a bit confusing to me, right? So this is not proportional to
math. There is a parameter epsilon, so it is here.
No, but I guess if I'm just look at the graviton propagator, it looks like that it's modified on the scale of lambda, right? Because there is, if I just look at the graviton propagator from just the action, there would be the scale of lambda that enters in it. So do I expect the inverse square law on the scale of lambda to be modified? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Okay, but I think in that case, so on that scale, probably you are outside the validity regime of the EFT.
Is that true? So basically, like on Earth here in laboratories, am I outside this? I mean, validity of the EFT. Is that the statement?
So probably I didn't understand your question correctly.
Well, I mean,
let's say I'm
just trying to say the Cavendish experiment that measured the force between two balls, which is on a small scale. Am I outside the regime of validity of this?
No. So in that case, you could be, as long as this two particle is far away enough, then you could be within the validity regime of the EFT.
Well, I mean, the size of black holes are kilometers. If I'm doing this in laboratory, it's a millimeters. So I'm just trying to understand, isn't it better to do it?
It depends on like the strength of the gravitational field. Yeah, so for example, you can calculate or you can construct some Lorentz inversion scalars with your background. For example, you can calculate the size of this operator and you can compare it with the cutoff scale, and then you know if you are under, if you are within the validity regime or not.
Okay, I see. So you're saying it's that size. Okay, thanks.
Okay, so now we have the correct Ridge-Wheeler the Rayleigh equation, and with that we can think about gravitational wave scattering, and And in this plot, I show you a kind of a sketch of the potential. And here it is showing the torus coordinate. So the black horizon is at minus infinity. And now we are going to scattering some gravitational waves on this potential. So for us, we will only consider gravitational waves with the frequency that is lower than the height of the barrier. And to be more precise, we can introduce this parameter gamma. So we only consider gamma to be smaller than one. And in this case, we can write down solution. For example, in this region, we know that the solution is given by the, the WKP solution is given by the one that decays exponentially under the barrier. And then by doing the matching, you can find out the solution at spatial infinity. So basically the solution would be a superposition of injection wave and a reflection wave. And also you can read off the phase shift that caused by this scattering. And using the WKP approximation, so the phase shift is given by this. And from the phase shift, you can also define a time delay caused by the scattering. So this is just some kind of a standard calculation. And for the time delay caused by the scattering, you may expect it can be split into two parts. So the first part is just the GI answer. So basically it's the time delay you get when this C1 is zero. And besides that, you also have contributions from the dimension 8 operators or from this term. So for us, of course, we would be more interested in this this extra time delay, this delta T L. For example.
So what's that RT? How do you define the RT location?
Sorry, what RT?
There, when you describe the orange line, I mean, how is that RT?
This location is just, for example, when the frequency is equal to the height of the potential, or when this is zero, when this quantity is zero.
Sorry,
it's kind of the point that the wave turn around.
Oh, for a specific wave. So it has nothing to do with the potential. It has to do with the energy of the incoming wave with respect to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we only consider like waves with frequency lower than the height of barrier. So you can always find a turning point. Okay. So we are going to we are interested in this correction from the high dimension operators. And for example, if we have this delta TL to be positive, then it means we have an extra time delay. Or in other words, the high dimension operators makes the gravitational wave propagate slower than that in GR. And on the contrary, if we have a negative delta TL, it means we have a time advance, which means the speed of after the correction would be faster than that in GR. So with all the formula, we can calculate like this delta TL numerically. And here,
can I ask a question here? But so your causality condition, I guess, it's imposed based on the sign of delta TL, right? I'm wondering, this is like the phase velocity, right? It seems like that you are looking at this one particular frequency and then this phase shift. I mean, I think the phase velocity, for example, larger than one, does not necessarily violate the causality condition. I mean, you have to add many monotonic waves to get a pulse and then look at right, what the group velocity of this pulse to tell. I mean, have you considered that? I mean,
So I think so there would be some, this is a kind of a set problem. So I mean, in flat space, we know that there would be some relation between the kind of the face velocity and the front velocity. And I think it's a necessary condition for this one to be.
What I'm trying to say is your delta TL a function of omega?
Yes.
Yeah. So if it's a function of omega, then the phase velocity and group velocity are different. So I think you probably want to evaluate the group velocity to really set the causality constraint.
My intuition would be, so at least from what we know from the in the flat space, so if you have this one to be subliminal, then you could have the front velocity to be subliminal as well. But for on the curved space, it's true that it's a little bit subtle.
But the problem is there is no wave number here, because I mean you have ingoing and then outgoing, and in the middle something that's exponentially decaying. So it's not clear what group velocity is, because you're not talking about the wave packet.
It's they're talking about ingoing wave with a given frequency omega, right? So it's
but there is no single wave number, like ingoing and then it reflects and then it's outgoing. So so it's, I guess you got to time up the turnaround time somehow. And I don't know what's the wave number there, because wave number keeps changing.
It's okay. It's so, I mean, you can look at the asymptotics, right? Like, so you should probably take care of it.
Anyway, so another thing I want to mention, so it's not just the sign of this, delta TL matters. So the magnitude also matters. So we will talk about that later. So when we talk about causality, but for now, so let's focus on like just the numerical value of this delta TL. So of course the sign of this delta TL would depend on this C1, which is the coefficient of this dimension 8 operators. But then if you look at this quantity, and you can calculate for both odd perturbation or odd parity mode and even parity mode, you would find that so the odd parity and even parity always have the opposite sign for this delta TL, this small delta TL. It means, so no matter what's the sign of this C1, you could always have a time mode advance in this particular model. And then we come with the question. So if you think the gravitational wave in GR propagates in the speed of light, then in this theory you are inevitable. They have a time of advance, then that could indicate some subliminal propagation. And you may be wondering,
sorry, I guess with my colleague, I'm also struggling about the meaning of causality here, because so it's true that in GR, waves of infinite frequency travel at the speed of light, but waves with a finite frequency are not, they're traveling slower than the speed of light. So in your TGR, you will measure, a delay that, I mean, so you TGR will, convey the result that the propagation speed for finite frequency is smaller than the speed of light. And then you're going to add a small correction on top of it, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to violate the, the speed of light bound.
Yeah, you mean, so the total time delay can be still positive. Right.
Well, I'm saying that waves propagate slower than the speed of light when they have finite frequency. So it's only the high frequency waves that propagate at the speed of light. So I think, you know,
yes.
So what I'm saying is that a small correction will never, I mean, a small correction, delta TL is not going to, I don't think it's going to violate the causality bound.
Well, we will see that. So I think what you mean is, so for low frequency, we also have some positive TGR, right? And this small TL cannot compensate this TGR.
Yeah, so even if it's negative, it's not going to...
But it's not going to
overcome the GR term, because by definition, that's a small correction.
Yes, but to violate the causality, actually, we will see. I mean, I will try to argue that we don't need this delta TGR to compensate the. We don't need this delta T to compensate TGR. Probably I can.
So maybe I can ask it differently. So is the argument that interactions that lead to effective field theory should always slow things down?
No. So here you can see that at least one of the modes could be propagates faster due to the interaction with the virtual.
And are those, you saying they violate causality or not? If they
not necessary. Okay. So in some case you could have some wireless causality.
Okay.
So this question is kind of ahead of my talk. So you will see in the probably next slide.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm just trying to say that. So you could have a subliminal propagation, but this does not necessarily mean that we could have a. It indicates a violation of causality, because so one example we know from the QED is this. So for example, you can consider photons propagating on curved background, and if the energy of the photon is, for example, lower than the mass of the electron, then you can also integrate out the electron field, and you would get an effective field theory for this photon. So besides this, the eurokinetic term, you also have some non-minimal couplings with the background curvature. And this term will be suppressed by the, for example, the mass of the electron. And similarly, you can calculate the speed of this EM waves on this, for example, Schwarzschild background. You would find first the speed will receive some corrections, and also the corrections depends on the polarization of this EM waves. And in particular, if you consider radio polarization, you would find the speed would be larger than the speed of light. But on the other hand, we know that so there should be no causal violation, because we know so how we obtain this EFT. So we know kind of the UV correspondence of this low energy EFT, and the UV theory is causal, so the EFT must be also causal. So the point is, from this example, we can at least know that a subliminal propagation does not necessarily mean the violation of causality. Then the question is, so what kind of time advance or what kind of a subliminal propagation means violation of causality. So one perspective, I think it's probably something Eric just mentioned. So this perspective is usually called asymptotic causality. So basically it is as, well, it's fine to have a negative delta TL as long as the total time delay is positive. So this argument so somehow makes sense, because we already see, for example, in flat space, there should be nothing propagates faster than the speed of light. But if you really think about what does this mean, is that so the retarded propagator of this field should have no support outside the light cone set by the high energy mode. And the reason we are emphasizing on the high-energy modes because so when the high-energy modes, when they propagate, they will not affect by the other field, and they will simply follow the geodesic, and therefore the light cone of the high-energy modes, they represent the causal structure of the UV theory. And now if we consider some low-energy modes, when they propagate, so their light cone would be different, could be different from the one set by the high-energy mode. And the reason is they will interact with these vertical particles of the heavy field. And the difference between this these two light cones is actually captured by this delta TL. It's not the total time delay, because this delta TL is you can think so it comes from the high dimension operators, and in other words, it describes the interaction between the vertical particle and this low energy mode.
So Yun, now at this point I'm a bit confused. So if I think of the theory, so what is the rule of the game here? So if I imagine sufficiently high energy modes, causality will be violated just because the theory has it from the get-go. So you could be outside a regime of applicability of the EFT that you assume to construct it. So how would you tell these?
So for the high-energy mode, we assume there is some UV theory, and the high-energy mode certainly has energy larger than the cutoff of the EFT, but but in this case, you don't need to use the EFT to describe this high-energy mode. So you just know like what would be the light cone of this UV theory. So probably in this model, you can think the UV completion theory in our setup is just just the GR, because we know the GR could be valid up to the Planck scale. And when we talk about this cutoff scale, we assume the cutoff scale is below the Planck scale. And that's why if you consider some high energy modes and you calculate the time delay of this high energy mode in this scattering, the answer you get is just the GR answer.
Maybe I'll come back later on this. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Right. So anyway, so our perspective is it is really this extra time delay matters when you talk about causality, and we call this as infrared causality.
I'm not sure I'm convinced by this argument. I mean, mm-hmm. And I think what I guess I'm struggling with a little bit of the language here, because I mean, you've calculated something that you call the time delay, but it's something that you calculate, and it's back to what Juan was saying. You're calculating this for a monochromatic wave, and I don't know, you know, operationally what the time delay means. I mean, for me, a time delay would be, okay, you send a wave packet, and you know, the wave packet was passing you coming in at some time, and then eventually it returns and you measure it again as it comes out. And that's a travel time that I can measure and make precise. And then I can decide whether that travel time was faster or slower than what a high frequency wave packet would do, you know, something that would propagate on a geodesic of the space time. Mm-hmm. So to me, that would make the causality question well defined. But here, I'm sensing that, you know, you're using words and you're using, you know, quantities, but I'm not convinced that you're really making contact with the causality question.
But on that point, could you not think of the an experiment where you just imagine two binary black holes have just merged, and you just look at the peak of the waveform just because you look at that, at four different masses. So then, or collection of events that do that, and maybe you can then say something about relative time delay or relative time shift as you sweep across masses. Could you not do that? I mean, just as a single
event. I don't know. That sounds more complicated than just following your wave packet.
Well, I think you probably don't need to consider like a black hole merger. So here we're just scattering some maybe single frequency waves, and we can scattering with very high energy. By high energy, I mean the frequency higher than the cutoff scale, and you can see the phase, and from the phase you can define kind of the time delay.
Sure, but
and that, also you can.
Yeah, I imagine that, but that's an experiment we cannot set. I mean, we don't have a black hole, and we cannot produce a waveform that goes in and out. So I'm just trying to see if kind of in the back of your mind, you're thinking that eventually, once you try to translate this to an experimental setup, you're going to consider a collection of events and then say something in relative terms, which would be like setting the analog. I'm trying to think of what one was trying to go after, where you have a series of monochromatic waveforms, and my monochromatic waveform now is the peak of the waveform, just that. I'm only looking at the signal at the detector.
I'm not sure.
Well, I guess at least my intuitive way of thinking about this time delay is by you sending a pulse and then you receive the pulse, right? Then you compute the time delay, and to get a pulse, you need many, many different frequencies.
On this slide, you're saying, the TL on the left seems to suggest this because you're taking a derivative with respect to frequency, which, I don't remember the formalism well enough from quantum scattering, but, that seems to suggest that maybe you're constructing something analogous to a group velocity for a wave packet. But I don't see, when you break it down into a background part and a correction part, I don't see that there's too much meaning in this. Breakdown. I mean, as a calculation, sure, but the real physical effect is the total, not one of the pieces.
I don't see why you don't understand, or why you don't see we cannot break this into these pieces, these two pieces.
Calculationally, you can, of course. What I'm saying is that the effect that you measure, the actual time delay that you measure for your wave packet, well, it's going to be the sum total of background and correction.
Mm-hmm.
And if, and I don't see how that can violate causality.
So I just wanted to say that, Eric, I don't think what you're saying actually makes a lot of sense, because the high frequency modes don't actually come back. They just fall into the black hole. So you cannot really compare high frequency and low frequency modes with each other.
Well, I mean, okay, you can. I would have to make it more precise, but I'm trying to make the question precise.
Well, in this case, you don't have to expect the wave actually come back, so you can deflection. So you can wait the wave in the other side of the black hole, because this is just
right. So you can have two observers, one on each side, and one sends it at a given time, the other one receives it at a given time, and you measure the travel time, and then you compare that travel time for the wave packet to the wave travel time that you would have for, an actual massless particle, like an actual photon.
And even for the high frequency wave, so it can also the wave is not falling to the black hole directly. It has some impact parameter, so you can still observe the high frequency waves and see how what's the time delay is.
Well, I mean, I think that I guess you're talking past each other, but I mean, I think there is a philosophy here which I'm kind of familiar with, which is somehow loop correction should slow things down. So my understanding is this. So we're saying that you have the GR calculation, which doesn't have any loop corrections. And then anything on top of that should slow things down. So my understanding that that's the philosophy. So we're not comparing high and low frequencies. We're just fixing the frequency when just saying that the high frequency, the loop corrections in EFT should slow things down. Now that's...
Or by slow things down, you mean it would modify the speed?
I just said delta TL should be, I think, positive.
That might be the expectation, but if it turns out to be negative, to me, that still doesn't translate into a causality violation.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you call that a causality violation, Jun, if it's delta TL is negative or not?
It only violates causality if it satisfies two more conditions that I'm going to.
Okay, so go ahead then.
Yeah. So if you just have a time advance, or if you have a negative time delta TL, it does not necessarily lead to a cause violation, because we already see an example in the QED. So the question is, so what kind of a time advance indicates a violation of causality? So here are the two conditions. So the first one is what we call resolvability. That is, the time advance, the magnitude of the time advance should be larger than the scale of the wavelengths, because we are talking about some waves. So we want to make this time advance resolvable. Condition is, so the calculation that we did should be in the validity regime of the EFT. And then by combining these two constraints, you can have some conditions on the time cause violating time advance. So basically, it is this condition. I'm not sure if it makes sense.
Sorry, may I ask a question related to this? So in your, I'm not sure I understand everything you have in your slide, but I could have a theory where the speed of propagation is twice the speed of light. Would you call that causality violation? I mean, as long as in that theory, no modes can propagate faster than twice the speed of light or equal to that, that has nothing to do with violating causality. Or is your thought causality with respect to the speed of light as we know it?
Well, I think so first the causality is set by the UV theory, because we assume the UV theory must be causal. And in that theory, if you respect the Lorentz invariance, then the high energy mode must travel in the speed of light. So if you have some low.
Good. That sets up some rules for the game, and I'm happy to accept it. But why? I mean, are we not trying to have it both ways? So we're thinking the UV is a theory that where propagation is speed one. Now the ultra infrared, which is whatever GR, is speed one. Everything in between. Well, if everything in between either only propagated speed of light, or it will always be a causality violation. Am I being dumb here?
Sorry, I didn't quite follow you.
I mean, the assumption is that the UV complete theory will have the speed of propagation equal to that of light. Then we have GR and BRN, which has speed of propagation equal to that of light for massless particles. Then anything in between, where it either has no real deviation from that statement, or any deviation will give us a causality. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so now, I mean, in this setup, you can just think the GR is for the system we are considering, you can think GR is the UV theory. And the EFT is more like you have something, some new physics happens below the Planck mass. So all the causal violation effects would only appear below the Planck scale. If there is something.
Yeah, okay. I guess I'm still stuck with the assumption that the UV complete theory will have propagation equal to that of light. I mean, I could have something that.
Well, I think if you assume the UV theory must be Lorentz invariant, then yeah, I don't see why you can have like a different speed of light.
But that UV theory could be a theory that doesn't have that light. I mean, we have Lorentz invariance. We have tested it at some limit, so it could up to whatever limit satisfy it, and then slowly or gradually change all the way to the Planck scale. So it seems to me that's a very strong assumption.
Okay. I see. So you mean if we talk about something above the Planck scale, then the UV theory could violate Lorentz invariance, or could have something propagates faster than speed of light. Then we don't know. For example, if you have something, for example, if your UV theory is not GR, then we don't know like how to kind of separate the these two parts, right? So you don't know what's the answer you got from your UV theory. So it's certainly not this TGR, it's something else. For example, if you calculate the time delay and you get some number, and now your UV theory is not the GR's not general relativity, then when you define this extra time delay, you should compare it with the answer you got from the UV theory. But in any case, so what matters or what tells you how, so whether this time advance wireless causality is this delta TL. So this is, which is the difference between you calculate from your low energy EFT and your UV theory. But in this specific setup, so we consider GR as our UV theory, and the low energy EFT comes up from integrate out some heavy fields with mass lower than the Planck mass.
All right, thank you.
So let me just continue. So, right. So this is what we mean by the infrared causality. So basically, it imposes a condition of this form. So, if the parameter satisfies this condition, then it will violate the time advance will violate the causality. And now we can use this condition to check our theory and see what we can get. So first we can look at the odd sector. So from this plot, we know that we will have a time advance if the C1 is positive. And then we can plot the lower bound and also the upper bound for the odd perturbation. So basically, this curve corresponds to the lower bound, and this curve corresponds to the upper bound. And then we find that basically in the gray regime, we will have causality time advance. And in order to avoid that, so we can impose some constraints on this epsilon. So basically, we require the epsilon must be smaller than this value, which is roughly 0.4. So this is what we got from the by looking at the out sector. And if we look at the in sector, it's even more interesting, because in this case, we would find the lower bound and the upper bound will never intersect, which means, so it doesn't matter how small the epsilon is, we always have a cause violating time advance as long as this C1 is negative. Right, so the difference can be understood by looking at the corrections on the Ridge-Wheeler, the Rayleigh equation. So for example, the reason we have differences for the odd and the even sector, the corrections have different scales on this multiple. Okay, so to summarize, so basically from the inferred causality, we can conclude that so the theory in our model must satisfy these constraints. So here are some comments that I want to make about this result. So first, this is connect with theoretical considerations. This is connect with some other theoretical considerations. So basically, so our result is consistent with the other considerations. For example, in this paper, people trying to construct dimension 8 EFT from string theory, and indeed they find the EFT they got all have the positive coefficients. And also if you impose positivity bounds, you could also find that the positivity bound requires the coefficient to be positive. And another comment I want to make is about the comparison with asymptotic causality. So basically, if you require the asymptotic causality, you can also impose some constraints on the coefficients, but this constraints would be weaker than what we have if you impose the inferred causality. And the important thing is, so the inferred causality is kind of consistent with the other theoretical constraints. And also the definition of the inferred causality does not require a definition of like flat space. So it does not require the space to be asymptotically flat or asymptotically Minkowski. But for the asymptotic causality, their definition kind of require a Minkowski background. And the last comment is about the constraints from the observation. So as I said, so in this paper, they also consider the same dimension 8 EFT. And they analyze the two gravitational wave events that are observed by LIGO, and by perform that analysis, they can exclude EFT with a cutoff scale of roughly 10 to minus 13 eV. So basically, in this plot, you can see here they show the Bayes factor when they're comparing the EFT model and also the GR model, and you can exclude this parameter regime. But on the other hand, we know from infrared causality, we could also impose some constraints on the cutoff scale. And of course, these constraints depends on the mass of the black hole that you considered. For example, if we consider, and from here you can see that, so the constraints would be stronger if you consider smaller black holes. So for us, we can consider a black hole about 3 solar mass. And in this case, you would find there will be a lower bound on the cutoff scale, which is roughly about 10 to the minus 11 or 10 to the minus 10 eV. So in other words, by simply consider the infrared causality, so the parameter region regime that can be probed by the current LIGO detector should already be ruled out. Okay, so I think that's all I want to say about this particular dimension 8 EFT. Yeah, I'm not sure if there is any other questions.
Maybe I can ask a question here. I mean, I'm not 100% sure about this infrared causality argument, but there is another thing, right? Like, so usually when people say causality, it's about this propagation effect. Now you're comparing GR with modified GR black hole. So you're shooting waves to two totally different objects. And then you're comparing the time delay for these two very different objects. I mean, maybe the propagation is causal, but since these two objects are different, so you're observing different delay time, right? Having negative or positive net delay time doesn't necessarily mean it's causal, a causal, because the central object is different, right?
Well, it's not kind of a modification of GR. So what you are comparing is, so you can think in a same theory, and the difference lies between the high-energy mode and the low-energy mode. So for the high-energy mode, so it's simply described by this, you can think as a UV theory or the Euro general relativity, because when they propagate, they will not affect by the high field. But for the low-energy mode, so you can also write down how the low-energy mode propagates in this UV theory, but you need to consider the contribution from the other field. So the one way is you really calculate the interaction with the other field. And another way is what we are doing now. So we use these higher dimension operators to mimic these interactions. And then you can find out the speed or the time delay of this low energy mode would get affected. And if you really do this, or if this EFT is really obtained from your UV theory, then the time advance you got is always causality preserving. So for example, you could have some time advance, but this time advance will be non-resolvable. So the EFT theory is still causal. But since now we don't know, for example, we don't know what would be the real UV theory. So we just write down a EFT. So we don't know like what would be the coefficient of these high dimensional operators. But simply from the causality consideration, we can exclude some EFT model. Because in this EFT model, if you calculate the time advance, you would find a causal violation. And this means this EFT model do not have UV correspondence.
Okay.
So, yeah. So in other sense, so you have some UV theory and you have a lot of low energy EFTs, but all these EFTs, or only a subgroup of this low energy EFT have UV correspondence. So from using causality, you can rule out the ones that do not have UV correspondence. Because because if this one, if this low-end EFT is obtained from some UV theory, it must be causal. So if you doing calculation in some EFT and you find some causal violation, then you know that this EFT should not have a UV completion. And back to your question, so we are not comparing like a phase shift into different theories. So it's just the same theory, but we are considering, So what we're really comparing is the time delay of the like the high energy mode or the low energy mode.
Okay, I guess you're saying the high energy mode is the same as GR.
In this case it is. So, yeah, because we expect so all this new physics comes at a scale lower than the Planck scale. So you can think the UV theory at least is valid up to the Planck scale. So in other case, so as long as you are below the Planck mass scale, then the physics is described by GR.
Okay,
so now we can try to extend the discussion to some generic operators. And of course, for example, here we consider some operators with arbitrary dimension, and we assume this operator will preserve parity, and we can write the corrections on the Ridge-Wheeler equation in a similar form. But of course, we need to do some extension or generalization about the definition of our parameters. And then if we assume the correction and the potential also scale with L to the nth power, then we can write the inference causality condition into this form in the large L limit. So the thing we can learn from this condition is that, so if this N is greater than this M plus one, then it means the lower and upper bounds will never intersect. And in that case, if we find some time advance, then it means the coefficient of this particular operator must be some definite. So this is basically what happens in the even sector when we talk about the dimension eight operators. For example, we know that so besides the operator we consider, there are other dimension eight operators, but unfortunately, so this one varies parity, so it is beyond our consideration. But for this term, so if you look at the corrections on the potential, you will find for the even mode, there's no corrections, but for the odd mode, the corrections scale as like L to the fourth power. And using the argument we just mentioned, so we can directly conclude that the coefficient of this operator must be positive if we want to avoid causality violation. And one thing I want to say is that so all these constraints are only imposed in the case that the dimension eight operators is the leading corrections on the linear gravitational waves. But in general, we know that so when you write down EFT, so you should write down all the possible operators. So there could be dimension four and also dimension six operators. So when we look at gravitational waves, we should consider the leading contributions from these operators. So in following, we can look at these operators one by one. So we can start with the dimension four operators. And for the dimension four operators, probably you already know that. So basically they will not contribute to the linearized gravitational waves reach flat background, at least up to this order. So the really contribution or the leading contribution comes from the dimension six operators. And here I write down all the possible combination of these dimension six operators. So it's a lot of terms, but fortunately, so if the terms are proportional to the Ricci tensor square, then they will not contribute to the linearized gravitational waves. So basically you can see this by putting this Lagrange into the quadratic order, and you will find, right, if the background is reached flat, then they will not contribute. And also if we are in four dimensional space time, you would find this term would be a linear combination of the B3 term and some other terms. Therefore, we can also neglect this term. And then we can do a further simplification, which is the field redefinitions we talked about. So for example, if you redefine your metric in this way, then the Einstein-Hilbert action would transform in this way. So basically by choosing this delta G mu nu widely, you can also remove terms that are proportional to the Ricci tensor. So in the end, we would only end up with one term in the dimension six operators. And then we can do a similar calculation for this one. And we will find, so there will be causal violating time advance if this B1 is negative. Therefore, so in order to avoid causal violation, we can also impose some lower bound on the cutoff scale. But different from the what we have in the dimension eight operators, so the lower bound can be only imposed when B1 is negative. So if B1 is positive, then the cutoff scale can be as low as it wants. And another thing is, so the lower bound is the lower bound kind of depends on the mass of the black hole. So previously we consider a black hole of three solar mass, but if you believe in primordial black hole, then this kind of the lower bound can be much higher, and eventually you can see that. So I mean, from the infrared causality, you can kind of also fix the sign of the dimension six operator. So basically, you want this B1 to be positive to avoid causal violation. Right, so that's all I want to say about the causality constraints. So in the following, I will briefly comment on the detectability of the high dimensional operators. Right, so basically, so here are the kind of the typical scales in a binary system. Now in the EFT setup, besides of these three scales, we have an extra scale, which is the cutoff scale of the EFT. Then there would be like two possibilities. So for the first possibility, in this case, the cutoff scale or the inverse of the cutoff scale could be smaller than the size of the black hole. And in this case, your EFT will be valid, could be valid all the way down to the horizon of the black hole. Therefore, you can calculate, for example, the corrections on the coordinate mode of this black hole within this EFT. Similarly, you can also calculate the correction on the tidal deformability. But the problem is, in this case, the effects from the high dimensional operators would be suppressed by these small parameters. And it would be very unlikely to make observation of these impacts. But still, you could have a different possibility, which is the inverse of the cutoff scale is larger than the size of the black hole. And in this case, you can still use your EFT to describe the binary system. And this is actually what people considered in this paper. Right.
Question. So what, how come this one scales like b to the 16? And when you consider just two dimensions lower, it went like b to the 10? I mean, what am I missing in the counting?
You mean why this is, why it appears at such a high PN order?
No, I'm talking about a relative PN order. So this one with D8, you have something that is telling us b to the 16 power. And in the previous slide, you have b to the 10th power. So I'm confused as to why such a large difference when it only went up by two dimensions.
So in this case, this is the effects from the dimension six operators. And this one is the corrections from dimension eight. So yes. So you are asking why there are like they entered as different PN order if you consider different operators?
Yeah, so let me explain it this way perhaps. So we know, so from just Pons-Newtonian analysis, that any internal structure that the object might have will show up at fifth Pons-Newtonian order. So I would expect the V to the 10. So your slide, when you refer to the D6 operator, has a V10, but this one has V to the 16. So what's going on? I don't understand why this one goes all the way to 16. When one way of considering what I'm doing is I'm just adding some structure to the black hole when I compare to the GR case or even the post-Newtonian case. So why this one climbs all the way to the 16?
I think, for example, if you calculate the gravitational potential, for example, between these two particles, and you would get a different power, like you have different power of 1 over r. So, for example, if you calculate the correction on the gravitational potential with this one, you would have like higher power of 1 over r comparing to what you get from the dimension six operators.
So isn't it true that the Riemann tensor goes as V to the six? Just Riemann tensor for binary. I was just doing it and it looks like, I think the Riemann tensor scales as V to the six. So if you add an extra Riemann tensor, then you get an extra V to the six power. I mean, the difference between D8 and D6 is an extra Riemann tensor, right? And the Riemann
tensor. It's a Riemann tensor squared.
It's just one extra Riemann tensor. So anyways, I think it's just the power, it's just the factor of a Riemann tensor that the scales us like V to the six.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So in this case, so it, you can make some detection. So although it appears at kind of a very high PN order, but still you have some coefficients, and in this case, this coefficient can enhance the effects of this high dimension operators. But for the dimension eight operators, as we said, so the current gravitational wave detector is not sensitive enough to make real interesting detections. But we know, in a more generic case, we should have EFT of this form, and the real contribution should come from this dimension six operators. And in this case, we would expect the future gravitational wave detectors can make some detections, first because they appear at low NPN order, and also from the causality constraints, we know that there would be no lower bound for the cutoff scale. This is different from what we found in the dimension eight operators. So basically in this plot, I show you kind of the parameter regime that can be probed with future gravitational wave detectors. So basically we consider equal-mass black hole binaries, and the total mass is showing the horizontal axis. And we assume the binaries at some distance. Then with this source, we can probe the cutoff scale basically within the contours showing this plot. Okay, so I think that's all I want to say. Thank you for your attention. I will stop from here.
Okay. Thank you, Dream. I guess we already have a lot of discussion, but any last questions for Dream? Well, if not, let me just thank you again. And.